This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Ellen Greenberg, finally, the attention that has been needed on this case is making some ground. More ground, I would say, has been made in the last week than in the last 14 years of this lack of investigation, I should say. Ellen Greenberg, in 2011, 27-year-old schoolteacher found with 20 stab wounds, took a baffling turn when her death was first ruled a homicide, only to be reclassified as a suicide on the scene. Over the past 14 years, her grieving parents have campaigned for justice. We've had them on the show before, fighting what they describe as a cover-up and a botched investigation. Recently, fresh developments, including a settlement that reopens the investigation and a dramatic sworn statement from the pathologist, Dr. Marlon Osborne, having thrown new light on this long-standing mystery. Eric Fattis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, joining us. Eric, given your background as a prosecutor and a defense attorney, where do you think the investigation, and why do you think the investigation went so awry or never really started? And what are the implications of a medical examiner reversing his or her ruling on a case this old? And they're not in the office to, you know, it's not like officially being changed yet. They're just saying, yeah, if I could do it over again, this is what I'd say.
There are so many peculiarities in this case from the beginning of it until now. It's so bizarre. I don't know that I've ever seen a medical examiner change their opinion in that fashion and at the 11th hour, you know, years and years later. It's just very curious to me. And also on top of that, the nature of the settlement is bizarre. Usually a settlement's for money, or sometimes it's to make the police department reform their policies or something. But it's not usually to make them reopen a case and re-examine an entire new case and possibly, you know, institute some criminal action because of it. A lot of bizarre factors in this case.
It's endless. It's one of the strangest cases I think I've ever seen. I mean, essentially, if you're to believe the narrative of what happened, is the ex-fiance broke the door down, which had been latched from the inside, according to him. The original story was that the security guard, the doorman for the building, came up and watched this happen. New reporting just the other night on News Nation from Brian Enten, they tracked down the security guard. He said he was never up there. He was not there when this door was allegedly broken down. So add that one to the mix. But if you're to believe the story, as I was saying, that this woman then stabbed herself 20 times, some very deep stab wounds in the back of the head and in the front, eventually with one in the heart directly, supposedly, and also came back from the dead, stabbed herself again a few times, and then that's how they found her. So essentially, we're talking about a zombie at some point in this equation without actually saying it's a zombie involved in this equation. How the hell did that even happen? I mean, nobody said, you can't, this doesn't equate. It's like you were saying she stabbed herself after she was dead, and nobody said, no, oh, that happens. I mean, like, I don't get how this even could have gone where it has gone.
It seems like a physical impossibility that the medical examiner in that jurisdiction subscribed to and told people that was the truth. You know, you think about Vincent van Gogh, the artist who killed himself. My understanding is that he stabbed himself once or so in the stomach and died. If someone's going to stab themselves to death, it's going to look a lot more like that and a lot less like 20 stab wounds, many of which are to the back of the person's body. That's not how it happens.
No, I mean, this never happens like this. The probabilities are so insanely low, and especially for a female to be doing that to herself. But nobody stabs themselves 20 times. I mean, the amount of pain you'd be going through, even if you're really dedicated and you really want to end it, why would you do that? It looks like a crime of passion when someone is stabbed violently 20 times and the body is moved from its original position, where you can see the blood stains going down this way and now they're going down the other way. But that's how they were found. But it's a suicide. There's so many questions, and very few answers. I think the only answer one could come to on this is, well, why would someone change their opinion on this being a homicide to a suicide? Why was there never any sort of investigation into the death? The knife didn't even have prints on it, or they never looked for prints on it. They didn't do any sort of DNA analysis. They kind of just went along with the story of the ex-fiance and called it a day, and then let a family member come in and take evidence from the scene. As an attorney, what does that look like to you?
It looks like certainly an investigation that was botched from the very beginning and then got worse. I've never seen law enforcement allow, you know, a potential involved party's family member to come in and meddle with the scene. That suggests that there could be something afoul about what's going on, because it's so improper. It messes up the legal aspect of it in terms of chain of custody, in terms of evidence preservation. I just can't fathom why law enforcement would do that unless they had some other reason I don't know about.
Yeah, there's so many questions as to why people had this one story then. And this is going to court too with the civil cases, the other ones. And we'll probably see settlements here with the others, may even be done by the time anybody sees this. But we had the medical examiner say this. I wonder who else is going to say maybe some things should be done differently. They're saying they're going to open the investigation again. Thank goodness. This is not a suicide. So I would think whoever is behind this, and I don't know who it is, I'm not accusing any specific people. There are certain people that obviously look a bit suspicious that should at the very least be questioned. But yeah, I mean, that too, that was another huge part of this. No questioning of anyone, just nothing. Nothing was done. It was just, oh, here's the story, must be true. Have you ever seen a case like that where it's just accepted carte blanche across the board, and it's a violent scene that is clearly a homicide?
I've been, as a prosecutor, when I was on homicide call and a call would come out and we would go and it would appear to be an obvious suicide, we would still uncover, turn over every rock and look at everything, talk to the family, talk to associates, coworkers, learn more about what could have led to this. Even if we really thought it was a suicide, here, it appears to be the objective factors indicate a homicide. So why didn't they like really go to the ends of the earth like they're supposed to in a case like that? In fact, they did the opposite of that.
That's the baffling part. And it's shocking to think, I guess, how quickly maybe you can have people look the other way on things when you have the money or the power to do so, or influence. I don't know what it would be that makes people so blind to what is exactly in front of them other than some sort of pressure. That doorman testimony I found to be very interesting, and it wasn't like on the stand or anything. It was just good reporting from Brian Anton of News Nation, who was reporting that he tracked down the doorman, and yeah, doorman said, I was not up there when that door was broke open. And that was always kind of a weird part of this story, is the allegation is the door was latched from the inside and then it was broken into. There's not really any signs that the thing was broken into. It doesn't have the indications of what that would look like if you had done that. I've done that before where it's been latched incorrectly. And I had to, I went out a different door. I came back like, oh crap, I have to do this to get in on an apartment years ago. And it kind of messes up your door frame a little bit, or your wall, depending on where the things are connected. It doesn't just open the way that it looked. So that has always looked very suspicious. And now we hear the doorman even saying, I wasn't there. So I can't vouch that is the story of what actually took place. It kind of messes up an alibi a little bit.
And I can't, I've seen far too many cases where it's sort of the arrogance of the government that they get in this tunnel vision and, you know, they've reached their conclusion, right or wrong. And people on the outside are saying, hey, wait, like, what about this? Hey, did you look into this? Did you talk to this person? Did you secure this evidence? And they're just like, leave me alone. We're the government and this is how we feel. I've seen that happen so many times where they're just not open to listening. And if they would have listened in the beginning of this investigation, that family could have got more justice.
There's a lot of things here that I have no idea of where the evidence sits today, again, because it was never handled as a homicide investigation. Is that knife still there in an evidence locker? I mean, are there pieces to this case that are still out there in custody that can be reexamined? Or if this was never looked at as this, did they preserve any of those sorts of things?
You know, it's questionable. It would be rather uncommon to preserve a bunch of evidence from a case the government deemed to be a suicide, a government deemed to have no criminal activity. So there wouldn't be a case and there wouldn't be a reason to save evidence for a non-case. So I would be pretty surprised if there is some sort of significant cache of evidence, including the knife, that the government still has that can be tested. Now, hopefully there is, but I'd be very surprised.
From a legal aspect, how nervous should someone be who was behind this, if they were behind this? Again, I'm not saying any names. I'm just saying whoever that person is, how nervous should they be? The fact that this is being now reinvestigated, a lot of these things are coming to light, not being looked at as necessarily a suicide anymore. Other people are speaking up and saying that's not part of actually what happened. But those key pieces where you could have DNA, where you could have prints, where you could have so many things that could lead us to answers here, not in existence, basically. Is there a strong enough case with what is out there and what exists to charge anyone at this point? Or did somebody get away with murder?
I worry that because the investigation was so botched, because the evidence acquisition and preservation was so bungled, to put together a homicide case is hard as heck when you have all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so when you don't have it and you don't have the witness statements you need, you don't have contemporaneous investigation, you are looking at a Herculean effort to convict someone of murder at this juncture.
Yeah, I get it. On the surface, you know, the armchair detectives out there, we can look at this and go, yeah, I mean, this looks obvious. But again, looking obvious is very different than actually convicting someone.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.